I don't walk into this building very often without recognizing its the building's centrality to the ministry that God has allowed me to participate in for almost 20 years. This is the place where Mount Carmel started. And you, some of you, are the people who were instrumental in the beginning of that. And so I come into this building with a gratefulness for your part in the history of this school, and with an alertness that we continue to be indebted to you. And so I am grateful again to be here with you. This wasn't only the place that started, but this was one of the places with people whose hearts were soft for another generation, who wanted to see God's ways grow in the next generation, who wanted to see those people equipped to live out their faith. That's still what drives Mount Carmel. Mount Carmel is still about helping people live faith in all the corners of life. Letting the fact that Jesus is the King affect how I deal with my bank and how I deal with my boss and how I deal with my neighbor. Mount Carmel wants to help all of life. It wants to help students let all of life be shaped by faith, because you know how quickly we compartmentalize and we come and we worship and then we go home and complain about our neighbor not shoveling their sidewalk right. Or all those different things where we struggle to really let Jesus be King of everything. And so Mount Carmel is focused on helping students with that. You've been, as a congregation and as individuals, long-term supporters, and we are just really, really grateful for that and grateful for the ongoing relationship. When Frank and I first came up with the idea of me coming today, the plan was to bring some students who were forming a choir and those sorts of things, and then the person organizing the choir said, no, it's not happening. It's too soon, and we're not going to do it. And so we'll reformat the plan here. You kind of got stuck with just me, but let me tell you a little bit about Mount Carmel and kind of the key things. We continue to be really blessed. In the early years that I was involved in Mount Carmel, there was a constant struggle to make sure that staff were paid. And over the last several years, we've been able to pay staff fully. We continue to need money. That's always a need. And yet, we have been really blessed that way. We have been able over the last 3 years to upgrade that old building that some of you were involved in beginning and purchasing. And that building has had a pretty significant improvement made to it in the last few years, and we're really grateful for that. We have a really stable staff. I'll walk into work tomorrow with six other people who have all worked there for at least 4 years. The seven of us have been together for several years. There's only two of us that are full-time. Everyone else is part-year or part-time. And so we try to have people balancing life with other responsibilities. We have home renovators. We have renters. We have librarians. We have people working all sorts of other jobs in order to allow them to pour themselves into students at Mount Carmel. The big challenge for Mount Carmel and for all Bible schools is recruitment. It is students. Culture shifts. Needs change, interest changes, and we continue to really struggle to attract students. This year we have 16. We would really like to be at 30. We say we cap at 40. And that's a continual struggle. I had lunch on Friday with a guy leading another college in this area. And we both, and many other schools, are experiencing the same thing. Partly it's simply changing need. Partly it's cost of education so that students feel that they need to get to university right away, can't afford to take another year, can't afford the money for tuition. It's possibly partly that as Christians, as church congregations, we've maybe lost a little bit of the push for students, for high school students to say, take some time and go to Bible college. That may not be something that churches are encouraging as much for whatever reason. There is a continued struggle to attract students, and we certainly are a part of that. There's some comfort in knowing we're not alone. I mean, I have to tell you that. I'm kind of glad somebody else there with it, but it doesn't solve the problem. And so that is an ongoing challenge. We have worked really hard. One of the things we do that helps some but doesn't necessarily recruit students per se, but get our visibility out, is Facebook ads. So you'll know about Facebook, and we put ads on there, and it does get us connections. We need people, and it's usually face-to-face conversations that cause students to come. So as you talk to people who are interested in understanding Christian faith, interested in living Christian faith, I would encourage you to remind them not only about Mount Carmel, about the value of Bible college, of Bible school, the value of taking a year to understand faith, the foundation it lays, and encourage people to take that year. It makes a difference. I have watched it. Many of you have watched it for more years than I, and I am aware of that. But I know that it helps people live faith, and so I would continue to encourage that. Mount Carmel is about people, about tying people to Jesus, and to the way, about tying people to the way of Jesus. You are in the midst of a study on Colossians, and when Frank and I talked about this and I was bringing a choir, we decided that I wouldn't fit into that series, that we'd do something different related to what students were doing. So now I'm stuck. What do I talk about? Because Colossians is all mapped out. Colossians describes a new society, a new way of living based around a new king. It says, hey, everything's different. There's a new ruler. And the first chapter of Colossians lays out who that ruler is and how he affects life. And therefore, there's a new way to live. And I want us this morning to take a look again at one of the invitations of Jesus, of this new ruler, this new king that Colossians describes. And I want to take you back to Matthew 11. Oh, you're probably really familiar with this phrase, many of you. It's not a new topic. But Colossians invites people to live in a new way, to order their community in a new way. And Jesus made the same sort of invitation. So I'd like to take you to the invitation of Jesus. The world is full of invitations. We usually call them advertisements. How many advertisements do you see in a day? Well, if you're an average urban dweller, the average person living in a city in North America sees somewhere between 2,000 and 2,500 invitations a day. We are surrounded by signs, by on the bus, on the roadside, on the stores. All around us are invitations saying, look at us. Buy this. Go here. Do that. And they're all invitations. And it's as if we live in a marketplace of voices calling for our attention. The voice of Tim Hortons calls to me regularly. And I try not to answer, but man. And I hear the voice of commerce, the voice of business saying, buy this. And the voice of investment saying, do this. And the voice of a new vehicle. And the voice, all these voices inviting me to participate. And it's like I'm in Strathcona Farmers Market. And there's all these stalls everywhere. And everyone is beckoning me to come and buy their product. And it's a constant invitation. And life is that constant invitation. Come and buy this product. Come and do this. Come and listen to me. Come and do my exercise program. Do my weight loss program. Do my vegetable program. Do my whatever. And all these voices surround us. And I walk through life wondering which voices to listen to. And off in the corner of the market, in a stall without a lot of flash, without a lot of signage, without a lot of impressiveness, is a quiet voice of Jesus saying, come, and I will give you rest. And I'm surrounded by all these voices, and this voice gets glossed over. This invitation I can miss. Or I can turn to it and then get pulled to the other louder, more impressive invitations. But in the corner of the marketplace of life sits Jesus saying, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. And in this marketplace of voices, we're constantly deciding who to listen to. We're constantly making choices about what will get our attention. And the invitation of Jesus stands before us as another way to live. Well, let me pray and let's look a little through Matthew 11 and then particularly at those verses. Father, this morning, I hear your voice again, inviting us to come. Oh, and we know there's louder voices. We know there's other pulls on our hearts and our affections and our time and our efforts and energies. But we chose to be here, and I'm glad for these people. And we want to tune our heart to your voice. So would you help us? Would you help us to sort through all the invitations in our world and respond to yours in ways that are helpful for us and honoring to you. So help us this morning as we think about your ways, I pray. Amen. In Matthew 11, Jesus is interacting with people. He starts out interacting with John the Baptist, one of his supporters, one of the key person who announced Jesus' coming. And John the Baptist has started to wonder at the beginning of chapter 11 who Jesus really is, because Jesus doesn't fit his stereotype of what he thought that voice would be like. John the Baptist had some ideas as to what Jesus would act like and what Jesus would do. And now that Jesus has shown up, John's looking at him saying, well, you're not quite the type of king I thought you would be. You're not quite the type of Messiah I expected. Are you sure? And John has some questions, and so he sends in the beginning of the chapter some of his disciples to go and talk to Jesus, because Jesus wasn't really fitting their expectations of a Messiah. I had this moment last summer where I was at Mount Carmel, but I was dressed in my lawn-cutting clothes. I do some lawns. Mrs. Bennett sees me regularly in my lawn-cutting clothes. And I had been out doing something in yards, and I was dirty. It was a dirty day. You know, it was one of those days where the grass is really green, and your pants are green, and your shoes are green, and your fingertips are green. And I had stopped at Mount Carmel, and I was in my office, and some guy in a suit came walking down the hall to see the president of Mount Carmel. And I couldn't fit out the window. I had to come out my door. And I wasn't exactly the kind of president he was expecting. And John the Baptist has that moment where he looks at Jesus and he says, you're just not exactly what I was expecting. And we have those where though it seems like this isn't exactly what I thought it would be. And then after we read that in the beginning, Jesus goes on in his response to John's disciples, he goes on to say, you guys have a whole bunch of expectations. John the Baptist, he came living a very rigid and proper life, and you said, aw, he's way too uptight. We don't want that. I come celebrating life. I come enjoying and welcoming people. And you say, you're just a drunk and a partier. That's not an exact quote, but that's exactly what Jesus said. John came neither eating or drinking, and they say, he has a demon. The Son of Man comes eating and drinking, and they say, he's a glutton and a drunkard. And Jesus says, what do you expect? And this voice in the corner of the marketplace says to us, I won't be exactly the kind of Messiah, of king that you want, but I'll be the real king. So then after Jesus deals with those expectations, he challenges their response to him. Is what your NIV caption probably reads something like, woe on unrepentant towns. In the verses 20 to 24, Jesus says, he critiques those cities who are determined not to respond to his invitation. Cities where Jesus had performed miracles, and he says, you're going your own way and you're not responding to my invitation. And it's going to be worse for you. And then Jesus turns in verse 25 to people, and he issues his invitation again. John the Baptist had heard it, and John was wondering, really? Those cities had seen it, had seen Jesus' life, had seen his miracles, and they're saying, I don't think so. And so now Jesus turns to the people around him and says, here's the invitation again. At that time, Jesus said, verse 25 of Matthew 11, I praise you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because you have hidden these things from the wise and learned and revealed them to little children. Yes, Father, for this was your good pleasure. All things have been committed to me by my Father. No one knows the Son except the Father, and no one knows the Father except the Son, and those to whom the Son chooses to reveal him. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And in verse 25 and 26, after critiquing his critics for their arrogance, Jesus praises the God of the common person. Jesus lived in a world where the religious leaders, the Pharisees, the teachers of the law, had a certain arrogance. They knew the way. And they not only expected the people to respond to them as voices of authority, but they also wanted people to respect and give them authority over them. And Jesus says, you know, God, I'm really grateful that the children get your ways and the wise and learned don't. You see, in the marketplace of life, sometimes the upright, the people who are all together, walk right by the booth of Jesus because he doesn't seem appealing, intellectually stimulating enough. And sometimes the uptight walk right by Jesus because they're going to do it themselves and they're going to make it. And that was Jesus' world. The upright, the uptight, the altogether good enough didn't see Jesus as a real option because he didn't keep the law the way they did. He wasn't as committed to the things they were committed to as they were. And so Jesus here says, Father, you've kept your ways from the upright and the uptight, but you've made them available to the common person. Jesus describes it as the little children. But the idea is the non-impressive, the non-important can come to Jesus and say, I will follow. And Jesus says, I'm so glad you make this available to children. Sometimes we develop adult taste buds. I found myself going by choice. I was having lunch with somebody the other day at a buffet restaurant, and by choice, I went back for broccoli. That's a weird thing, because there were many years of my life where, by choice, I would have avoided broccoli at all costs. But I developed a taste for broccoli. I've developed some adult taste buds. Most kids don't like coffee. What's wrong with those kids? I really like coffee. But we develop adult tastes. And Jesus here says, God's truth isn't just for people with a taste for it. God's truth isn't just for people who develop. It's available to all. It's as if he says, God's truth comes in bubblegum flavor. Everybody can access the way of Jesus. You've hidden these things from the wise and learned and revealed them to little children. And sometimes we can develop adult spiritual taste buds, where we want somebody who will challenge us with a new truth, push us to something deeper, give us a new paradox and a new insight, and none of those are wrong. But God's ways, the ways of Jesus in the corner of the market, are for all people and are simple. And in an age of internet preachers where you can find all sorts of people who will say what we want to hear, it's really easy to convince ourselves that our spiritual flavor is right and necessary and important. And it's not that it's bad. But the truth of Jesus is for all people. And it's simple. And it appeals to the non-important, to anyone who stops at the booth of Jesus in the marketplace of life. His truth is available. And then in verse 27, Jesus says, all things have been committed to me by my Father. The Father gives truth to me. And he says, no one knows the Son except the Father, and no one knows the Father except the Son and those to whom the Son chooses to reveal. God puts all his truth in Jesus, and Jesus says, and I can reveal it to you. Again, it's as if Jesus is in the corner of the marketplace saying, it's all here. It's available to all. And so many of us walk by wanting something a little more impressive, something a little more appealing. Jesus just says, God's things are available and accessible. They're all wrapped up in me. Therefore, come to Jesus. So that becomes, in verse 29, 28, 30, his invitation. In a world of voices, here is one more. We're familiar with the voice of Jesus. You're here. Lots of us have heard the voice of Jesus for a long time. But we too can start walking by, assuming we're familiar, assuming we hear, and miss the invitation one more time to come. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened. Jesus is directly talking to the people in his world who are tired of the religious demands of the Pharisees and the scribes, tired of trying to measure up, tired of trying to be good enough. And he says, just come to me, all you burned out on religion, all of you tired trying to have the right answers, all of you tired of trying to say the right thing at church so people think you understand your faith, all of you tired of trying to be good enough, Jesus just says, come to me. See, we're the weary and burdened. All of us have times in our life where we've just had enough of trying to impress or trying to be good enough or trying to fit in. And Jesus just says, just come to me. We live in a weary world. We hear so much about stress, so much about pressure, so much about demands. There's demands to work more, to talk more, to communicate more. Do you know how many communication devices we have? Oh my goodness. Do we have more to say than we did 25 years ago? No. Just watch TV. There's nothing more to say. But there's all these demands. We live in this weary world, in this stressed world. Somebody said, stress is a feeling you feel when you feel you don't want to feel anymore. Sorry, I missed part of that. Stress is a feeling you feel when you feel you're going to feel something that you do not want to feel. And we are stressed, burdened, and we weren't made for this. And Jesus says, come. See, the offer of Jesus isn't just to come to a belief system. It's to come to a person. The offer of Jesus is not just to come to a set of answers. It's come to me. And I will give you rest. Come back to Jesus. Back to the author and perfecter of our faith. Back to the one who died for us and who invited little children to sit on his knee. And he says, come. Just come and be with me. It's not to a system. It's not to a place. It's to a person and to his way of life. And the offer of Jesus, no matter what stage of life we're in, is to come. And every day, you and I can choose if we'll stop with Jesus, if we'll come back to him, or we can carry on in the marketplace of life listening to all those other invitations shaping us and demanding us and pushing us and pulling us. And Jesus just sits in the corner and says, you can come. But he doesn't stop with come. He says, take my yoke upon you and learn from me. For I am gentle and humble in heart. Take my yoke upon you. In Jesus' world, they had the idea of the yoke of the law. It was a phrase that the Pharisees would use. The law of God, that which guides our life as a nation, as the people of God, the law is our yoke. And we take on the yoke of the law, the burden of it, and it is what we pull. And Jesus flips it and says, I have an idea. Take on my yoke. My father grew up farming with horses. And I remember him telling me that when you were training a horse to pull a wagon, pull a sleigh, pull a plow, you would match a young, frisky horse with an old, steady. And you'd take all the energy of the young one and you'd harness it with a yoke together with an old horse who knew the ways of the field and the ways of the farmer. And all the energy of that young horse would get matched up with the steadiness of the old. And the young horse would take on the yoke of the old and would learn to walk that way, would learn to work that way. Jesus says to them, instead of taking on the yoke of the law, the demands of this religious establishment that surrounds you and shapes you, why don't you hook up with me? Why don't you tie yourself in to my way of life? You see, we all learn to live life from somewhere. I grew up in a generation that learned to live life from Mr. Dress-Up. People a little bit younger than me learned to live life from Bert and Ernie. And then we had Barney. But there's all these children's entertainers on television teaching people how to live. But we all learned from our parents. And we all learned from our peers. And somebody taught us how to do life. And Jesus sits and says, come to me, and I'll retrain you. I will teach you to walk my way, to live my way. I have life tricks. Have you ever watched? My favorite tradespeople to watch are drywall mudders. Have you ever tried to put mudding on drywall and then like paint after when you're done? I mean, putting on's pretty easy, right? You just fire it on. But then you have to sand it and you have to get it smooth enough that you can paint over. You know why this is stippled? Because there was a bad mudder. No, I don't know. I love watching a good mudder because they can go so fast and they make it look so easy and they know the tricks of the trade. And if you know the tricks, you can kind of do it. I could hook myself up with a drywall mudder. I could take on his yoke. And in about 6 years, I'd be able to be pretty good. Jesus says, I know life secrets. Hook yourself up with me. Take my yoke and learn from me. And you know what you'll get? Rest for your souls. And Jesus invites us to life with him. And the invitation still stands. Oh, most of us have come to Jesus. Most of us have committed our lives to him. But he still says, come and learn from me. And I'll teach you a life of forgiving your enemies, of praying for those who persecute you, of turning the other cheek. I'll teach you to live life my way. It's sort of like going to a cardiologist who says, we're not going to do surgery, but we're going to do a complete life revamp. We're going to change your diet. We're going to change your exercise programs. Let's change your way of living. And Jesus says, not for your physical heart, but for your life. Let's change your way of living. You see, the two horses in the yoke, they walk together. Jesus says, tie up with me and we'll do life together. And I'll teach you how to respond my way. Well, why would I sign up with Jesus? He's sitting in all these voices, all these invitations, and Jesus says, hey, pick me. Why? And Jesus says, for I am gentle and humble in heart. I have nothing to prove, nothing to gain. Jesus isn't going to benefit from me getting involved. It's not for his good. It's for mine. And you will find rest for your souls. You'll find relief. You'll find what fits. You'll find a way of life that we're made for. I sometimes do some distance running. And if you're running a reasonably long distance, you have to find a way to carry water. So I went to a garage sale, because I'm cheap, and I bought a backpack. And in that backpack, there's a bladder of water. And so like you wire yourself, kind of like this thing, but it goes in your mouth, and you suck on it, and you have water. Except I bought mine at a garage sale. And it rubs me funny here. And it doesn't really fit. But I went to MEC one day, Mountain Equipment Co-op, and I tried one of theirs on. And that was easy and light. It fit me. It was made for me. Felt like I was home. Well, the creator of the world says, my way of life was made for you. It fits you. Come to me, take my yoke upon me, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. It fits. And how often do we start thinking, oh, there's got to be a better way. There's got to be something else. And we let go of the simple, fitting way of Jesus. Some of us come today somewhat new to the Christian faith. And I say to you, the way of Jesus fits. And I invite you to stop and listen to Jesus as he invites you to a whole new way of life. But most of us are pretty familiar with the words of Jesus. We've heard that invitation a lot. But come again. Let your life be shaped by this way of life, this other-centered, self-sacrificing way that is what we were made for. It fits. Come, Jesus says. Come and walk with me as you raise your children, as you pray for your growing children, as you shovel snow for your neighbor, as you let your neighbor shovel snow. Come and learn from me how to do it. And the call of Jesus isn't just to come and believe the right things, to agree to a set of statements, but it's a call to come and learn life. Following Jesus is a way of life. These verses from the Message translation or paraphrase of the Bible read this way. Are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion? Come to me. Get away with me and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me and you'll learn how to live freely and lightly. So in the marketplace of life, amidst all the invitations of our world, Jesus' voice continues to come to us, continues to invite us to come and learn his way. And so I invite you again over the next few days to stop with Jesus and ask him how to handle the challenges of your life, the obstacles you're facing, the burdens you're pulling, and then walk with him. Keep in step with the Spirit, Paul says, and let him teach you how to live. I want to end reading a poem that I found that I heard years and years ago that has always stuck with me. It's called The Road of Life, and it uses the analogy of a bike as the metaphor for teaching us to let Jesus be the one we hook our lives to. The Road of Life. At first, I saw God as my observer, my judge, keeping track of the things I did wrong so as to know whether I merited heaven or hell when I die. He was out there, sort of like a president. I recognized his picture when I saw it, but I really didn't know him. But later on, when I met Christ, it seemed as though life was rather like a bike ride. But it was a tandem bike, and I noticed that Christ was in the back helping me pedal. I don't know just when it was that he suggested we change places, but life has not been the same since. When I had control, I knew the way. It was rather boring but predictable. It was the shortest distance between two points. But when he took the lead, he knew delightful long cuts, up mountains, and through rocky places at breakneck speeds. It was all I could do to hang on. Even though it looked like madness, he said, "Pedal." I worried and was anxious and asked, "Where are you taking me?" He laughed and didn't answer. And I started to learn to trust. I forgot my boring life and entered into the adventure. And when I'd say, "I'm scared," he'd lean back and touch my hand. He took me to people with gifts that I needed, gifts of healing, acceptance, and joy. They gave me gifts to take on my journey, my Lord's and mine. And we were off again. He'd say, "Give the gifts away. They're extra baggage, too much weight." So I did, to the people we met. And I found that in giving I received, and still our burden was light. I did not trust him at first in control of my life. I thought he'd wreck it. But he knows bike secrets. Knows how to make it bend to take sharp corners. Knows how to jump to clear high rocks. Knows how to fly to shorten scary passages. And I am learning to shut up and pedal in the strangest places, and I'm beginning to enjoy the view and the cool breeze on my face with my delightful constant companion, Jesus Christ. And when I'm sure I just can't do it anymore, he just smiles and says, "Pedal. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light." If you are able, why don't you stand with me and we'll pray. Again this morning, Lord, we hear your voice. We hear you say, "Come." And so we want to come. We want to stop and be with you, hook ourselves up with you, and live this next few days of our lives in step with you. Ah, we want to go beyond these few days, but we'll start here. May we hear your voice. May we be sensitive as you teach us how to live and respond to the challenges that we have. And may your strength empower us and make our burden light and easy, I pray. I pray these things in your good name. Amen. Amen. Thank you very much.